Welcome to Podcast Ed, the podcast of RedefinedOnline.org, covering the stories behind the new definition of public education. On this episode, Step Up for Students President Doug Tuthill talks with Representative Chad McCoy, Majority Whip of the Kentucky House of Representatives, representing District 50. Rep. McCoy was the sponsor of HB 563, Kentucky's landmark education choice bill that became law this year after several years of failed attempts to expand choice in the Bluegrass State. The two discuss the history of the bill, the influence of the teachers' union in Kentucky's rural areas, how the legislature overcame a gubernatorial veto, and how the bill provides choice access for families in public school districts as well. Thank you for listening, and enjoy the episode.
So I'm really pleased today to have Representative Chad McCoy from Kentucky. Representative McCoy was the bill sponsor of the Education Opportunity Account in program in Kentucky, which is really getting a lot of national press. It's a historic piece of legislation in the Ed Choice movement nationally and certainly in Kentucky. So we're anxious to talk to Representative McCoy and hear the Kentucky story. So welcome, Representative.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
It's our pleasure to have you, and I appreciate your time. First of all, I want to, again, congratulate you on a historic piece of legislation. I know y'all have been working on this for a long time, and I'm sure it feels great to finally get over the finish line. So people around the country are talking about you, and I just wanted to say congratulations.
Well, thanks. And listen, you know, I'm the guy that I feel like the imposter. I was handed the ball on the 1 yard line and I got it across, but there's really been a lot of work for a lot of years, probably even before I was ever elected. Yeah. Our floor leader, Bam Carney, is a public educator himself. And this has always been a project of his for years. And unfortunately Bam is ill and was unable to be there for these votes. So, I was happy to take it up and run with it. It's something I'm passionate about, but I really do want to acknowledge that our speaker and our former floor leader, their work was invaluable on this.
Well, I heard about the illness, and our hopes and prayers are with him and as he goes through his recovery.
Absolutely.
So talk a little about the history, how this bill got started and the kind of struggles you all have done over the years and what some of the arguments pro and con are. What can other states learn from Kentucky's experience?
Well, you know, our experience has been Kentucky is obviously a rural state, and we've got a lot of counties where the largest employer is, in fact, the public school system.
Right.
And that puts a lot of political pressure on people, and it gives the teachers union in our state a pretty big voice.
Right.
Maybe allows them to swing with a bigger bat than maybe they should. So first thing that happened was a few years ago, my first year actually being elected, Republicans took over the majority in the House. First time in 95 years.
Wow.
And what that gave us was control of the House, the Senate, and at the time we had the governor as well. So the next step then was at first scholarship tax credit.
Uh-huh.
Trying to emulate Florida, I think, in a lot. So we tried that, started having the discussions. Leader Carney was the one really pushing that. It didn't make it across the finish line. So when he took ill, I took up the scholarship tax credit last year. And the very first thing I did was tried to bring all of the people that I knew were against it into the room. We shouldn't be afraid to have a conversation.
Sure.
And so brought in the superintendents, brought in people from the various school districts. And they had a lot of concerns that, frankly, I thought were valid concerns. You know, are we going to make sure that everybody, they're not just cherry picking good students, for example, or we're not just cherry picking, quote unquote, smart kids. We want this to be applicable to everybody. And you know, from my perspective, we want this to really be something to give our poorer folks a choice.
Right.
You know, the people in the state that have the money have a lot of choice,
sure.
but not everybody has that choice.
Yeah.
So we really kind of, you know, massaged this thing and whittled it around and moved it. And at the end of the day, the only argument they had left was, Well, any dollar that is spent on this tax credit is a dollar not spent on public education. And if that's true, then that actually applies to everything in the budget.
Right.
Because any dollar we spend on anything is a dollar not spent on public education.
Right.
And I think, you know, it's fair to say then, as legislators, our job is to allocate our dollars in ways that we think are going to benefit the society the most. And so when that was their only argument, quite frankly, I'm really willing to stand up and fight them on that, because to me, that just doesn't cut it. Well, we didn't get that across.
Wow.
But then what happened was COVID. And with COVID, all of the sudden, Kentucky schools were shut down. Moms and dads around our state realized they had no choice. And that really, I guess, was a little bit of a silver lining to the cloud of COVID,
yeah,
is that parents around the state started recognizing the need across the board, across socioeconomic levels, and not just the need, but kind of the God-given right. It's my kid. Why don't I have the choice? So what we ended up having was two different bills out there. One was a bill that I call School Without Borders. Kentucky is a state where we pay our schools on a per pupil average daily attendance for the kids in their district. So if you live in District A, but you want to go to school in the next door county, you can't, because that school won't get funding for you. So one of the big things we did is we changed as a part of our bill this year and allowed the money to follow the kid. So with respect to our public school system, we now have school choice publicly across the board. And we haven't mandated it like they have to, but we've said every district needs to submit a policy about how they're going to take kids. And we recognize, you know, you've probably got capacity issues, for example.
Right.
It's not like every school can take 100 new kids. But what it's going to do, we hope, is, and Indiana has done this, if schools are good and hitting on all cylinders and they want to get out there and start recruiting, they're going to have the opportunity to make their policy be, heck yeah, we'll take you.
Right.
Now, that brought up a bunch of issues right out of the gate. You know, okay, well, are you going to discriminate against kids with disabilities, for example? They cost more. So what are we going to do there? And so we absolutely address that head on. There can be no discrimination.
Right.
You know, it's kind of a lottery system. The other big one, and some of our other rural states will have faced this, was athletics.
Yeah.
We had a lot of, in our rural places where, you know, high school football, high school baseball, high school basketball, that's the only entertainment going, and they're big. We didn't want schools to be recruiting based on that. And so, frankly, my gut was, you know what, this is an education bill. And I'm sorry, little Johnny or little Jane, if you want to play sports at the new school, this isn't about that. So we put a prohibition in. If you switch public schools only because of this bill, you can't play sports for a year. So we just kind of took that off the table. And that really allowed us to get a lot of folks behind this bill, that portion of it. Then the other bill we obviously had out there was the educational opportunity accounts, similar to what other folks may know as a scholarship tax credit, with one big change. And again, this may be something unique to Kentucky, but Kentucky has maybe three urban areas, big urban areas. You've got Lexington, Louisville, and Northern Kentucky, which is near Cincinnati, the Covington area. And those are the only real places with a lot of private schools. The rest of our state doesn't, there aren't private schools. So we said, you know what, if we're doing a school choice bill and it's only for private schools, we're not giving everybody in the state choice. Let's make it open to public schools as well. So we added public schools to our educational opportunity grants. And what that does is it allows a lower socioeconomic person anywhere in our state to apply for tutoring, if they need computer equipment, after school, if they want to have a summer program, for example. And then remember, we did the School Without Borders part. So it also then allows someone in a public school, if there is going to be a tuition applied, they've now got money for that public school tuition as well. Because to me, school choice is school choice. It's about a mom and dad making the best decision that they can for their child. And it doesn't have to be a private school. It could be a public school. We've got some great public schools. And so I just wanted to encourage all forms of school choice. So that was kind of the big change that got everybody sort of lined up. So we took those two separate bills and put them together. And candidly, you know how politics is. Sometimes that's the sausage making part. We had some people that liked this and didn't like that. Some that liked this and not that. So we put it all together and kind of, all right, hold your nose and vote yes. Let's go. And that's what a lot of it had to do. Now, if you go back and look at the votes, we also threw in full day kindergarten funding. And we did that because a lot of folks were making the argument to us, if you're so willing to spend all this money, here's a need we know the public schools have. Why don't you do that as well? And honestly, we thought that is a good idea. We probably ought to have that. And so, even though it was a lean budget, even though we're in the middle of COVID and things were uncertain, you will find that the Republican House majority in Kentucky truly values education. Right. It is a cornerstone for us. So we went ahead and threw that money in there as well. So the combination of those three things really got us not only over the finish line, but then got us the ability to override the governor's veto also.
Well, Representative, that was a brilliant set of moves. It's a good lesson for other people around the country to figure out, you know, how to bring all these pieces together. Why did the governor veto a bill that not to get you in trouble here and cause any problems, but
right.
It seems like, you know, full funding for kindergarten is something that I think any Democratic governor would, you know, dance around the room and be excited about. Low-income kids having more options seems like something that would, you know, be exciting. Giving kids in district schools, because one of the things we've noticed, and you observed it too, is a lot of the inequalities in education happen outside of school. I'm pretty sure if I followed your career, I would see a lot of your leadership development, a lot of your character development happen in things outside of school. And right. So a lot of kids can't afford sports. They can't afford access to these things. And we're fooling ourselves about equal opportunity if we don't think about outside of school learning. We pretend all learning happens within school. Of course, that's not the case. And so there's a lot of inequalities. And so I think it's really brilliant of you guys to say, okay, how do we allow all children, particularly lower income children, who are maybe in a district school, have access to resources that allow them to begin to learn outside of schools in ways that more affluent families have. So there's a lot of great things in here. You would think it'd be very bipartisan. How close are you to getting there, and you know, why the governor veto?
You know, we have 75 out of the 100 House seats. So there are 25 Democrats. Our governor used to be the attorney general. And a few years ago when he was attorney general, he led the charge. We've got a pension problem in Kentucky, and I know we're not alone with a pension right. problem for our public school teachers. Right. And honestly, it may not have been handled well, but we came up with a really solid bill to fix the pension problem. And there was some really hard feelings out there and a lot of, unfortunately, misinformation. Because again, we were honestly trying to fix the problem.
Right.
But back during those time periods, the governor came out, the now current governor, he was AG at the time, really came out strong with the teachers union. And let me be clear here a minute. We've got wonderful teachers in Kentucky. Sure. We really do. I mean, every one of these folks is there because they love teaching kids. They want to help. But unfortunately, we have a teachers union that, in my opinion, is not there to solve problems. They need to acknowledge there's a pension problem and they need to come work with us and figure out a way to solve it. And they don't seem to care.
Right.
And I think it's more about membership and power than it is doing what's right and doing what's right for kids. But those folks really supported our now governor, especially during his governor's race. And he won by a very, very small margin. And the other governor obviously lost by a small margin. But it was because of the way the pension was handled. So I my gut honestly is the current governor felt like he had to support these folks that he considers to be his base. But, it's unfortunate, though. If you go back and watch, not that anyone's this bored with their life, but if you go back and watch the arguments on the House floor, every point that was brought up just ultimately came back to, well, gosh, this is money you're not spending on public education.
Yeah.
To which we can now say, yeah, actually it is.
Yeah.
Because every public school kid in Kentucky, now remember, you've got to be at 175% of the poverty, reduced lunch level was what we chose. You've got to be in a family that hits that, but we line them up. Let's say we get 25 requests. We line you up by income and we pay the poorest first.
Right.
That was important to make sure that we're hitting the poorest of the poor here, giving them opportunities. And I grew up in rural Eastern Kentucky, and I always use this example. It didn't apply to me. I was blessed with my family status, but where I went to high school, we didn't have calculus.
Wow.
And that's not uncommon.
Right.
But with this kind of funding, kids could take an online calculus class,
sure,
probably get dual credit for it,
right,
and go to college with calculus credits and the knowledge in their pocket, and their family can do it even if they don't have the money. So it, to me, is I'm hoping our public schools will realize here's an opportunity for us to create new programs,
right,
and have kids have access to it. Yeah. You know, this doesn't have to be money taken out of public school kids or out of the public school system at all. So that was kind of, at the end of the day, those were the big arguments.
Yeah, in Florida, we have an education, we call it an educational savings account, an ESA. And families can spend that money in district schools. So if there's a service that the district school has and I want to access it, you can literally purchase that service from that district school. And so I'm hoping eventually that the district schools will be a little more entrepreneurial.
Right.
It's going to take a time because they got a lot on their plate. And certainly with COVID right now, they're just trying to keep their heads above water. But ultimately, as more and more states, allow families to control their education dollars, I'm hoping that the school districts will be a little more entrepreneurial and unbundle some of their services. You know, right now it's sort of you get the whole thing or you get nothing. And it would be great if they unbundle some of their services like happened in other places around the economy. And I think that's the future of public education. And I think you guys are really well positioned in Kentucky in terms of the bill you just passed.
Well, I couldn't agree more. It's definitely the future of education. Moms and dads know best. And there's so many other things that we can be doing. And I get it. Our public schools, we burden them with a lot of things, too. And I think it's a fair conversation as a society to go back and say, well, wait a minute. Is that really a public school function? Maybe we need to be doing things in different places and not putting so much on the public schools so that they can get back to that kind of core job. And like you said, unbundle those services and really let some of those people that are incredibly talented not getting to do what they really could do for kids.
Yeah. The other thing I think is going to happen is, I spent a lot of time as a classroom teacher myself, and I was always a little resentful by the fact that lawyers can create a lawyer's office and doctors can have a doctor's office and accountants can have an accounting office. But as a teacher, it's really hard to do your own thing. You pretty much have to work for the man. And what you're finding now with the pandemic is you see teachers helping create micro schools and learning pods and with ESAs or whatever we call them, flexible spending accounts, families can now spend money on those kind of things. And I think you're going to see a lot of opportunities for teachers to be have more professional opportunities, to be more entrepreneurial, and have the same kind of opportunities that other professions have too. So I'm hoping that's part of our future.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you, in my little town, we've seen retired college professors come back and kind of do that sort of thing. Hey, I don't want to work, 5 days a week, but I'd be happy to do a calculus review on Wednesday afternoons for 2 hours Boom. Now here's an opportunity for everybody to go do that.
Yeah.
So hopefully we'll see a lot more of that.
So what's the future? Are you starting to think about your next piece of legislation, or are you going to wait for a while?
You know, both. Okay. I'm always thinking about it. For these kind of big things that are almost a societal change.
Right.
I sometimes like to just have a pause to show everybody that the sky, in fact, did not fall.
Right.
And at the same time, though, I got to be honest, I feel like we've got some momentum.
Yeah.
So part of me wants to push hard.
Yeah.
But that's something that, you know, we'll talk to our members. Kentucky's only in session 3 months out of the year. So we don't come back into session until January.
Right.
So during this interim period, we will have those discussions about what can we do next, what's working, what's not working, you know, and I'm sure there's going to need to be tweaks. Every
sure.
bill, you pass it through and then you go, oh, crap, we didn't think about that. Let's
right.
go fix that. So,
right.
But I would hope parents will step up, because you can't imagine the support we're getting from parents.
Yeah.
Not, you know, and quite frankly, a lot of teachers as well.
Yeah.
Not the union, but the individual teachers.
Sure.
So I would hope that kind of support will maybe bring the people that are against this to the table so that we can have a good conversation about what can we do, not only with choice, but to help the public schools as well. I'm for getting the government out of their hair. Let's let them do their job.